Good morning. I'd like to call the meeting of the Travis Central Appraisal District's Board of Directors to order. The time is 11:30 on Monday, May 11th, 2020. We are conducting this meeting via Zoom meeting service and a quorum is present. The first item on our agenda is citizens communication. Do we have any citizens signed up?
We have no citizens signed up for citizens communication.
Okay. Item four on our agenda is the consent agenda. I'll give the board some time to review these documents and we will entertain a motion.
Mr. Chair, I have a motion that we accept it, but with the exception of the line item transfers and the accounting statements.
I'll second.
The item has been moved and seconded. We will pull those two items for further discussion. Let's take a vote. All those in favor?
Aye.
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 All those opposed? Motion passes unanimously. We will pull those two items for further discussion. Blanca, do you have any specific questions that you'd like to ask on this?
I just wanted a more explanation on it, not just a report that we read, especially on the accounting statements and the line item transfers.
Okay.
So on beginning on page 17, you have your February and March financial statements. We are ending March. Let me get to my page. The ending fund balance was $9.7 million. We have $5.2 million in reserves, and the budget surplus at the end of March was roughly $1 million. If there's anything in the financials that you specifically want answered, I can answer those.
No, that's fine.
Okay. And then on the line item transfers, those begin on page 70 of your packet. And this is just a routine transfer where we're shoring up our budget accounts. It does not have any dollar change to the taxing entities. It's simply just moving things between GL codes.
Still trying to find 70 here.
Actually, I did have a question on the transfers. What is COVID-19 headsets and iPads?
So we had to make an emergency purchase for our customer service department when they moved to a remote work setting. We had to buy iPads for them so that they could access the phone system. We had some issues where if you VPN into our system, they couldn't pull up PACS and answer the phone. So we had them set up an iPad where they could answer the phone but still access our system. And then the headsets are just to plug into the iPad so they can be more comfortable answering the phone.
Okay, so they're regular headsets and iPads. They're nothing. I was just wondering if they were like something specific to COVID. So that's just the reason for them was because of COVID.
Yeah, that was the reason we had to purchase them.
So they're standard headsets and iPads.
Yes, sir.
Yep. Bad the appraisal district didn't solve COVID with the headset.
No.
But they had some extra protection or something, but okay.
No, it helped us transition as many employees as possible to telework. And that was a way that we were able to transition some of our customer service staff to telework environments and still have them have access to our phone system and be able to answer phone calls to the public.
So have we experienced any savings from having people working remotely? I know that's an expense that we're talking about due to COVID. Are there savings?
The savings that we get are more realized by the staff member, the savings that they get in terms of not having to spend, time in traffic and gas and mileage and those kind of things. We have not noticed any loss of productivity, though, from staff members working remotely. So they are all just as productive in their remote work environments as they have been as they were working live on site. So we've been able to maintain productivity, even though we've gone to a telework environment.
And I did have one other question. I don't know if I didn't realize it was on consent, but maybe it was. On our fund balance, did I read it correctly that the money in our text pool account, we lost mark to market about $500,000?
We didn't lose any money. So all that you're seeing is the transfer between text pool and our Wells Fargo checking account, which happens at the end of March every quarter because of our fluctuation of when we receive payments from the jurisdictions. So it's just a transfer to a different account. Now, we are experiencing lower investment returns, like everyone is, but we haven't lost any money.
Okay, all right. I thought I saw that market value change was minus 500. So you're saying that was just a transfer out into another account. We sold something.
Right. If you were to look at our Wells Fargo statements, you would see the corresponding transfer in.
Okay, all right.
There any further discussion on either of these two items?
No, I move approval of the accounting statements and the line item transfers.
I second it.
Okay, the item has been moved and seconded. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
All those opposed? Motion passes unanimously. We'll go on to the regular agenda. Discussion and possible action on Chief Appraiser's report to include COVID-19 appraisal district operations, 2020 mass appraisal report, 2020 protest status report, attorney general opinion and request of interest to appraisal districts, informal meetings and updates, formal hearing preparation, taxpayer outreach programs, and 850 EAL renovation status.
Okay. So it's a lot we're bundling up in our Chief Appraiser report, but it's just more to give you guys an update. It is in our packet starting on page 76. Again, we still remain fully operational. Our lobby is closed to in-person transactions, but we have transitioned most of the business for the public. They can still conduct business with the appraisal district by mail. We have a Dropbox in front of our office. We have our phone, our emails. But we've also implemented a lot of online services, so they still can get a lot of information from our website, our property search. We do have active our online protest portal. Active is our homestead application portal. And brand new that we just implemented because of COVID-19 is we have online on our website the ability for them to engage in customer service chat sessions so that they can do chat online with our customer service representatives. And to date, since we implemented that, we've done about 617 chat sessions with property owners. So we see that that's being well received by the public, and we'll continue with that. We still have a skeleton crew on site. We're practicing social distancing. The remainder of our staff has transitioned to telework. The rendition deadline was extended to May 15th. That's within our statutory guidelines that we are able to do that. We also extended the application deadline for applications such as homestead, ag, other applications. We extended that to May 30th, which was within our statutory authority to do that. And we continue to look at modifying our informal meeting and our ARB formal hearing procedures as necessary. Particularly related to the informal meeting, we have done that and transitioned to doing that through telephonic informal meetings. We had thought that we might be able to do in person, but just because of COVID-19, that's impractical. So we are doing those all telephonically. We've implemented a new system called Get In Line Online. It's a queue system on our website. Property owners can either get in line to receive a phone call from an appraiser, or they can schedule in the future a date and time to get a call from an appraiser. So we're implementing that as a solution for our informal. Otherwise, our procedures and processes are as we discussed earlier in the year, and we're still moving forward with that. So the queue system is working out pretty good. As with anything, we don't have a lot of activity until the protest deadline hits. So we are getting some property owners that will get in line, but not a lot, but we anticipate that that'll go up substantially. You had a question?
A question. I have several questions about the queue process and the logistics of it based on some questions that were posed in a neighborhood discussion group. And I thought maybe they're just easily answered. I don't personally need the answer, but I thought they would be relevant as questions that the public is asking.
Mm-hmm.
So when they get in the queue, they have an option to switch which queue they're in, apparently. And they have questions about if they remove themselves from that queue, do they go to the end of the line in the other queue? Or do they lose their informal altogether? Like, so if they remove themselves from the queue, are they forfeiting their informal?
If they remove themselves from the queue, they are not forfeiting their informal. They can get back in line at another time.
That might be something to clarify.
That might be something that we clarify on our website if they do that. Yes.
And then if I get in line, is there a way to know about when they're going to call or if it's even guaranteed to be that same day? I don't want to lose my informal, but what if I miss their call?
So somebody gets in line in the queue and it does give them kind of a heads up. It'll shoot them. I think it sends them, if they got in line on a text, it'll send them a text message right before we're about to give them a call to let them an estimate.
Before they get in line, do they know that that's the process? Or do they only find that out once they get in line?
We could probably add additional information on our website.
Maybe preventing people from getting in line, not knowing what the consequence is if they miss that call.
Well, if they miss the call, what will happen is if we summon them and we're getting ready to give them a call and we call them and they don't answer it, what it'll do is they'll stay in the call in hold pattern. And we'll give them opportunity because we realize, you might be in hold for, 20 minutes or so. You may need to step away to go to the restroom, or you may have gotten another call. So we're not going to leave it at just one attempt. We're going to make a second attempt, and then we'll let you know that we've made a second attempt to call you. And if after the second attempt, we're not able to reach you, then it's going to send you a message and tell you that we've tried twice. We weren't able to reach you. Please get back in line again. We're going to make more than one attempt to reach them.
I think that would be important. I haven't looked since I read these because I knew we were having this conversation. Mm-hmm. But if it's not clear right up front, that may be preventing some people from getting in line.
Okay.
And then one person already did have their call. They got in line and they got a call back within a few minutes, which was excellent. And they had requested the online evidence packet when they e-filed, but they didn't get the evidence packet yet. So today she presented her evidence, but couldn't discuss our evidence, the appraisal district's evidence. So they did the informal and the rep said that the rep would consider both evidences and send her an offer. But
yeah, we do ask, and we do say that on the website that if you are getting in line and you've just filed your protest, to please give us some time so that we can get your evidence out there and to also submit your evidence that you want us to review before you get in line so that we can see it and we both have it, that we can talk about it. If you get in line before we've had an opportunity to send you our evidence or before you've had an opportunity to send us your evidence, we can't talk about it yet. So we are recommending to the public to wait until they do both those steps.
This person kind of jumped the gun then.
Yeah. But
the rest of them, maybe just a little bit of reassurance that if they get in line and miss their call, they don't lose their informal. That would be helpful, I think.
Yeah, we can do that.
Maria, I had a question about informal or protests that had been filed to date in comparison with protests that had been filed to the same date in 2019, where we are in comparison. More or less in terms of filings.
Okay. And I will give you an update on our counts. So I will cover that when I get to the protest status and give you the update on that one. And I think that'll come in right after, let me see. Just let me give you some updates on our calendar. We'll cover our mass appraisal report and then I'll get you the status data that we've got.
Oh, sure.
So we sent our notices of appraised value. They dropped in the mail April 10th, and we started our informal meetings on the 13th. The protest deadline is May 15th. That's a statutory deadline, and I don't have any authority to extend that. So the protest deadline is May 15th. ARB formal hearings tentatively were scheduled for June 1st to start. We don't know if we'll be able to make June 1st on the start date for the formal hearings, but it'll be shortly thereafter. And then July 25th, We will be mailing certified estimate letters to the taxing jurisdictions, and they will be able to calculate their tax rates based on the certified estimate letter. That's going to happen regardless of whether or not the ARB has gone and done the approval of the records or not. So July 25th will be certified estimate letters going out to the taxing entities. We will also make the taxing unit portal available for them at that time so that they can update their rate and all the information that they need to do. And then on August 7th, we're still on target to send the postcards we're required to mail per Senate Bill 2 to the property owners. Again, we did that last year, so it'll be similar postcard to what we'd sent previously. And then the ARB is on target to approve the records. August 30th is the date with our extended, because we're a county with a population of over a million. I've also included for you guys the a copy of our mass appraisal report. It's just an annual report that we have to do once we finish our appraisals, send our notices for Travis County effective January 1st, which is our assessment date. The total appraised value in Travis County was $287,314,711,630. And then that is the total in Travis County as part of our mass appraisal report.
The approximate, I assume it's an increase in valuation?
It is an increase. It's approximately about 5% increase over 2019. And that's led primarily by growth in commercial, not all commercial sectors, but it's commercial, office, retail, and multifamily are the sectors that we saw that had the most growth from the previous year. In terms of protests, total protests that we have on the system, I included the protest status report for you guys. And that was as of last week when we created our packet, we had a total of 42,970 protests on the system. We've resolved some of those. So we actually had a 41,811 that were active. We've had probably approximately 2,000 more protests filed since I've created the report. So some increase, but not anything substantial. Compared year over year to where we were at this time last year and where we were at where we're at this year, we are seeing that we are slightly behind in terms of overall volume. But the protest deadline is this Friday, so we will have a better feel for whether or not our protest count is up or down when we look at it after the protest deadline has passed. It's really too early to tell, and things are changing on a daily basis. That number will go up substantially. We expect that we'll get a lot of protests on the deadline, but that's what we have happen every year. Is, you know, right on May 15th, there's a lot of protests that get filed on the deadline date. And we don't know the entire ramifications of that until a day or two after that, after we've had an opportunity to get those processed in the system, either electronically or manually updated in our system with staff on site. So we've been getting, in terms of mail and the receipt of mail, we've been getting, you know, a quarter of a bucket of mail last week or so, which is less than what we would typically expect to see. So even the mail that we're receiving, it seems to be a little bit lighter this year than it has been in years past. So don't know yet.
Are the protests mostly commercial protests?
You know, the commercial, most of the protests that we have right now are residential protests. Of our total count, about 35,000 of those are residential protests. The remainder are commercial. But then in terms of total count of protests, commercial is always a smaller count. We only have a total of 14,000 total commercial protests. So residential always dominates in terms of volume and number of protests. Commercial will dominate in terms of value of protests. So per our report, commercial represented about 64 out of our $82 billion under protest. So commercial will dominate in terms of value, but residential will dominate in terms of quantity.
Since values did not change for many residential properties, what accounts for the 41,000 or whatever?
A lot of those are going to be agent protested accounts. Agents will protest regardless of value. They'll file protest on an annual basis. Okay. So the majority of these are going to be agent protested. And looking at our breakdown of the accounts that were filed, we've had about 40,000 agent filed protests. And we've had about 3,000 owner protests filed. So again, our protest volume predominantly is agent driven. Last year, between 75-80% of our protests were agent filed. And that's holding out to be true the same this year as well. To date so far, we have completed about 1,100, almost 1,200 protests have been completed. But again, we anticipate that will pick up substantially once the protest deadline happens. It's always very, very slow to start with. And then once the protest deadline hits, then we get a lot of demand. A lot of people want to do their informals after the protest deadline. A lot of people will wait to file their protest until the deadline. So we anticipate next week will be hopping for us. But right now it is just a little slow.
Mario, once all those are entered, you know, a week or so mm-hmm. after, would it be possible to produce a report for us that kind of shows the comparison of this year versus next year, or this year versus last year? Just so
absolutely.
Get all these questions answered before our next meeting. I think it'd be
absolutely
helpful. Thank you.
And I would just add, with a breakdown of agent filed versus individuals, that'd be interesting to see.
Okay. So what I'll do is there is that report is part of our packet, and we will just update that and get that out to you guys. I would anticipate probably next week, May 20th, would be a good point for us to redo this report and update it. That'll give us time to make sure everything's gone through the system electronically and that anything that we had to enter by paper manually has been updated in the system. So look for something probably around May 20th. We'll send that to you guys and get that updated. I also included for you guys two attorney general. One is an actual opinion that was issued, and then the other was a request that had been made. And they are of particular interest to appraisal district. The first one was a request from Senator Betancourt regarding disaster exemptions. There was a lot of question as to whether or not the new disaster exemption would apply to properties this year. And the AG's opinion request came back and said that no, the new exemption for disasters applied only to physical disasters. And would not apply to the economic disaster that we find ourselves in. So it answered a pressing question for appraisal districts as to whether or not, if we got applications for a disaster exemption, whether or not we should apply those this year. Per the AG, they only apply to physical disasters, and this is not a physical disaster, it is an economic disaster. The other thing that we included in your packet was the actual request from Representative Middleton. And it was a request asking some questions about operations of Airbnbs in light of COVID-19 and trying to get some clarification relative to operations. And at the time I created the packet, only the request had been in, but the actual AG opinion came out late Friday. So we are still digesting the AG's actual opinion. But one of the highlights of it is that if a property owner requires or requests to have their hearing in person, that the ARB is going to need to comply and do that and have that hearing in person for the property owner. In talking to my compatriots and other chief appraisers, the plan for most appraisal districts and appraisal review boards is that we will try to handle as much of our business electronically, particularly during the first most pressing course of COVID-19, do as much as we can electronically. And then once it's safe to convene in groups and we get past the COVID-19 pandemic, maybe later in the fall or the winter, that we can then conduct some in-hearing formal hearings. But at least to begin with, we will do those either telephonically or video conferencing. We are set up right now to do our Airbnb hearings telephonically. We've got all of the capacity. We are looking to expand our capacity on our phone system a little bit, but we already have the system in place to do them telephonically. I know some appraisal districts are looking at doing them maybe perhaps over video conferencing, but we are not at that point right now technically. We have the capability to do video conferencing, but we are set up right away to proceed and move forward with teleconferencing formal hearings. We're still going to be getting with the ARB to get feedback from the ARB in terms of how they would like to see that move forward in and how we are conducting ourselves. But we are prepared to do telephonic. We are going to, when we get into the new building at East Anderson Lane, we have some more protections set up. Just design-wise, it's better designed for us to put social distancing protections in place at the new building. We can social distance the ARB panels, but it would be difficult for us to social distance the public if the public were to come in. So telephonically, our suggestion and our plan initially is we would conduct ARB hearings telephonically, but both the taxpayer and the district would call in. The appraisal district would not be present physically if a telephonic phone conference was to go on for a formal hearing. We would do that telephonically as well as either the tax agent or the property owner. We would not be physically present if we were doing it telephonically, just to ensure that it is being done as fairly as possible. We would be telephonic as well. And again, we are set up and prepared to move forward in that way. We are still exploring and looking at if there are potentially ways that we might incorporate other technology in that, but we're looking for technology solutions that can be done in an economic manner without creating a substantial financial burden to the appraisal district in order to implement that. Let's see.
So just one more thing about that. If the AG opinion on having face-to-face is that if they request it, we should have it, then we're going to have to make preparations for some face-to-face if requested, it sounds like.
Yes, and I think we will follow suit like most other appraisal review boards and districts across the state, where they might be the hearings that we do at the tail end of the season at the end. But we would have to come up with some sort of way that we can do that in a way that will socially distance everybody. Again, we're not only talking about how do we social distance the actual hearing and the panel as it's occurring, but from the appraisal district's perspective, we also have to think about how do we social distance the public in the waiting areas as well and control that. So there's a lot of
beyond social distancing with precautions like wearing a mask. Hopefully we can still highly suggest, if not require, that if we do this in the month of June, that everybody's wearing a mask, or maybe we can provide them, I'm not sure, but I think that would be very wise if we have to go that route.
We are, even with our staff that is on site, our skeleton crew that we have on site, we have provided face masks for the staff to be on site. We would provide similar face masks for the ARB members that are on site. We're also looking at purchasing if there's partitions that can be purchased, those plexiglass partitions, purchasing those as well. You know, we're in the same boat with everybody else that is trying to, reopen and do it in a safe manner. There are supply chain, everybody, there's high demand for these plexiglass partitions. So you kind of have to wait for the supply chain to catch up with the demand and to be able to get that. So we expect and anticipate that there may be some delays in our ability to transition to those kind of things, just as we wait for the supplies to come in. But we are looking at that and those ways to do that. We're also looking at, if there is a option for face shields instead of masks and various things. I often email Bruce and ask him, how is the tax office handling it? What are their operations there? There are most similar kind of governmental agency that has a wide swath of public coming into their offices. So, if they've got some best practices, we want to also look at their example. And Bruce, is there anything new that you guys are doing at the tax office?
Well, we're going to be closed through the end of the month and maybe longer. But when we do open, the county attorney says we can require masks and we will do so. And we've ordered the plexiglass barriers as well.
So we're moving forward and trying to do this as safely as we can, but it's going to just, for the next couple months, it's just going to be a fluid situation as we adapt to circumstances and the situations that are in front of us. Let's see what else on the, informal meetings, again, as I talked about, we're doing those telephonically with our QLIS system. And then formal hearing preparations, again, we are looking at how can we reconfigure our ARB area so that the ARB members can socially distance and do the telephonic hearings, providing them the protective equipment that they need in order to be able to do that. And then also telephonically, both the appraisal district and the taxpayers that use the telephonic formal hearing process being remote and not being present at the hearing at that time. We also, for taxpayer outreach programs, we've done quite a few webinars and we've posted our webinar online. So any property owner that wants to view the webinar is available. It's out there 24/7 that they can watch our webinar online. We had a lot of town halls that were scheduled, but because of COVID-19, they got canceled. But we were able to service a lot of those property owners through our online webinars. It seems to work out really well when we do the online webinars. We get a lot more participation than we would get when we did the physical town halls. So doing the webinars might be the way that we do our town halls forward, just because of the outreach that we're able to do and the fact that we're able to post those and everybody can see it at a later date seems to be really well received by the public. And then on 850 East.
Can you give us a sense, Mario? Can you give us a sense of how many people are attending the webinars live or watching afterwards? I'm just curious to see what sort of numbers we're at.
Sure. We have our webinars, and we've done two mass webinars that we put out there, and we had over 100 people at each one doing the live webinars. I don't know how many people have viewed it post live session, so I'll have to get Cynthia to kind of see if she can give us the numbers on how many have viewed it since then. But when we do a live town hall, I might get 5 to 10 people. So doing it online seems to be much more productive for us than the live ones. An update for 850 East Anderson Lane, and again, this is COVID-related delays that everybody else is experiencing, just like we are. There are some delays for us just in getting City of Austin permits. City of Austin is a lot of their offices are closed. They're working remotely. So it's taking a little bit longer to work through the permit process. But we've got a couple outstanding permits that we're waiting for from the City of Austin. And then with any construction site, the delays in the supply chain have hit us just like it hit everybody else. Our current biggest delay that is of concern for us at that site is a delay in the new high voltage electric panels. When we're getting our electric system upgraded and updated, there was a delay in that equipment. We hope that it gets shipped this week, but there is always a potential that the supply chains may be delayed even further. And if they are, then that's going to create further delays for when we're able to move into the building. Right now, we're looking at a 1 week delay, but that could shift and become more of a 2 or 3 week delay, depending upon when the equipment that's needed gets shipped for us. So we were hoping for the end of May to have everything done, but we're looking at a delay of 1 week now, and that might slide for another week or two, depending upon the permit issues and the supply side issues that we encounter moving forward. But other than that, everything's moving forward. If you ever are out and about and are driving in that direction, you can see that they've put our sign on the outside of the building. So it is now labeled for us and our sign is on the outside, which is really exciting. Again, we can't move in yet because we're still waiting for it to be complete. And we can't get in there if there's no electricity. So that's really important. And that's a pretty critical delay for us.
So you were safe in putting the sign up right now.
Yeah, they were safe from putting the sign up, yeah. But that's about all we got. So we're still operating out of East 850 East, out of Cross Park Lane, Cross Park Drive, and our staff is still at Cross Park. And we don't anticipate that we'll be able to move the ARB in to East Anderson Lane until the first week in June, maybe the second week in June, when we'll be able to occupy it and take occupancy of it. But in terms of being able to social distance, the East Anderson Lane is the building that we have that we're better able to do social distancing in. There's just not enough space at Cross Park to do the kind of social distancing that we need to do. And that is everything that I have for the Chief Appraiser report. Any questions?
Okay. If not, go ahead.
Nope, I was going to turn it back over to you.
Okay. Next item on our agenda is 5B, discussion and possible action on ARB reimbursement requests.
So per the tax code, the ARB is entitled to per diem 4 days when they are holding hearings. And we've had quite a bit of work that the ARB has been doing that is not related to ARB hearings. And those go fall under the guidelines of reimbursement requests. So we've given you a packet of reimbursement requests from the ARB for requests for reimbursement for time and effort spent outside of conducting ARB hearings. And I think Mr. Fields is in attendance as one of our attendees. So if he is there, if you could unmute him, Cynthia, so that he can give us any additional feedback if he's got, or if the board has any questions of the ARB, Mr. Fields is here to answer.
I'm on, and Ms. Krigler presented our case pretty well. We do need some training to take place under this new system, and we're planning on doing that between now and we start. Most everything else is ready to go.
And that particularly is, last year we only had some panels that conducted telephone hearings, and this would be training so that we could prepare all panels so that they know how to conduct a telephone hearing.
That's right.
And if that's what's on, I'm sorry, go ahead, James.
I was just asking, do we normally reimburse for training hours?
Yes, that is part of the ARB budget, that they do get reimbursed for training.
Okay. What about the reimbursements that are listed on page 122? What are those?
These are for non-training, they may include some preparation for training, but that is for requests for reimbursement for expenditures by the ARB members that are not related to conducting hearings.
Oh, okay. And they're asking for that. We need to vote on that.
Yes, we'll need a vote from the board to approve or deny the request. There are several requests. We've got a total of 11 requests, separate requests from each ARB member, and it kind of tells you what they're requesting in terms of compensation. And then also attached to that is the request for reimbursement and for the members a log of what they're requesting reimbursement for.
With regard to the requests submitted by Mr. Fields, I think it'd be useful to have a lot more detail with that one.
And I also, agree.
I have questions about whether, you know, he's the last line, I was fully employed. I'm not sure what that means.
I'm sorry, I didn't hear you. Repeat it, please.
So Mr. Fields, what Mr. Groovy is asking is he would like to see more detail about the task that you're requesting reimbursement for. Okay. He'd like to get a little bit more detail on that.
I'll present it this week.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Fields. May I ask a question? Does Mr. Fields review the other people's appraisal, the ARB reimbursement requests?
Say again?
Did you review the reimbursement requests from the other members of the ARB?
We review all of them.
So do you feel that those are reasonable requests? Those people did do those activities, as far as we know?
Because, well, they were, we were involved with the work they were doing.
So you've reviewed them and find them reasonable?
I stand up for their inputs.
It's hard to understand.
I'm sorry?
I guess I'm looking for, Mr. Fields, if you have reason to believe their reimbursement requests are valid.
They are valid. This work. They are valid.
Great. Thank you.
And Maria, this may be a sort of a larger question, but how does this sort of work and request compare to previous years? Is it reasonable in that space? And then kind of secondarily, when we go to full remote hearings, how will the per diem work, whether it's a half a day or a whole day, and how will that be managed so the costs stay under control?
So what we're looking at for when we start doing our telephonic hearings, the ARB members will actually be on site for the hearings. We will socially distance them, provide them with PPE, again, the plexiglass dividers and other things. So they will actually be on site for hearing days. They'll have a phone, each one will have a telephone, and they'll call in and do the teleconferencing. And it will be the taxpayer or the property owner's agent and the appraisal district who will not be physically on site in the ARB room. So right now we've got our cubicles are 10 feet wide. So if we put ARB members one on each side, that puts 6 feet between members one and two. If we use the next panel over and put the third member in there, we get our 6 feet of separation for all of the ARB panel members. It reduces the total number of panels that we can do at any given time from 40 down to 20, because it now takes the space of two panels to have one panel socially distanced. But we can socially distance them in that manner and have them on site to do the hearings when they're doing their hearings. In terms of relative to prior years and the ARB, the board has in the past put some limits in terms of if it's committee work. They've put limits on how much they're willing to pay for committee work. It is, again, a request for reimbursement from the board. It's not unusual that we will see occasional requests for reimbursement on days or times when we're not doing ARB work. A lot of that is, in the past, has been specifically related to the ARB responding to taxpayer questions, phone calls, and emails. And there's a lot of that work that goes on outside of a hearing, particularly by the officers of the ARB that they have been reimbursed for in the past.
And that's what we did for submittals up till this point. We had a lot of telephone calls, questions about what's going to happen this year. And we discussed with the agents. And those are things that I did not put into my report.
Well, I mean, I would make a motion to approve the reimbursement requests from the ARB, except for Mr. Fields, pending more detail on yours, Mr. Fields, to be resubmitted.
Second.
I cannot support. Can we have a discussion?
Sure.
I cannot support paying them for not. This is not something that they had training. Absolutely, we pay them, but I don't think that we need to reimburse this request at this time.
And I was looking at some of these. Yeah, a lot of these are reading and answering emails. I'd love to get paid for that. Is that something normally we wouldn't reimburse for?
No.
Well, for the ARB officers, when they're reading and responding to taxpayer emails and requests for hearings and those kind of things, we have reimbursed either the chair or the secretary, the person doing the responding to those emails. They have been reimbursed in the past.
So how are they calculating this figure? Because I see a per diem rate and then hours worked. So are they getting the per diem plus an hourly rate for the number of time reviewing emails?
I took their per diem rate and I divided it by 8 hour days and got an hourly rate and then just multiplied that by the number of hours that they submitted. That is also at y'all's discretion if y'all rather pay them a different rate.
The per diem is required, and we're required to pay them per diem for the dates that they are actually conducting hearings. If they're not conducting hearings, then they're entitled to reimbursement for the expenses required for performing their duties and functions. So again, that is not necessarily saying that they have to be paid per diem for reimbursement. It is just, you know, something that we already have that we could use, but again, that's at the discretion of the board, and the board has done different requirements and made different types of payments other than per diem in the past.
To be clear, are we paying the per day rate plus an hourly rate?
Or? No.
No.
Okay, you just have that as a reference, you divide it by 8 hours, and then you calculate the number of hours by that rate.
Does anybody audit these requests to be sure that they're not both per diem and hourly on the same day?
I review to make sure they're not being overpaid, but I do not audit the work that's being done.
You do the math on them. Is that what you're saying?
No, I just calculated. It's right. It's a little confusing because it says per diem and then hourly, but the total is just basically $28 times the hours worth. So,
and the board has decided to reimburse differently in the past. One time you guys decided to reimburse for committee work a maximum of 2 hours, and you set what that hourly rate would be that was different than their per diem divided by 8 hours. So it is at your discretion what you want to do and how you want to do it. Leanna just used current per diem and divided it by 8 hours just as a default, but a point of consideration. But again, it is at the board's discretion to determine how you want to do the reimbursements.
I'd really like to look for maybe a recommendation from Leanna then on this issue.
I think in the age of COVID-19, before this, the board was always coming into our building. So we saw them, we knew they were there. So in an audit standpoint, we could justify based on door access reports or cameras. With them working remotely, I think a set rate in the past, y'all used $40 for a meeting, which was a max of 2 hours. That seemed to work well. We just need to make sure that we're keeping it very clear that these are independent contractors. They're not employees of the district. And having a defined payment of X number of dollars for this function works well for that.
Well, you know, also, if you look at one of them, they had a Zoom meeting with a lawyer to determine the future role of ARB. Well, I'm sure they're going to have the same type of meeting when they do more review of what their role is going to be. And so that would be paying them twice. I know there's one of the members that is asking for that. But that's also probably something they can read. And I'd have to discuss with an attorney.
I'm wondering, Leanna, if you went back over these requests by the criteria that you just expressed, what these requests would look like in terms of the dollar amounts.
I can prepare that for you for the next meeting.
That'd be great, I think. I mean, I'm assuming here other board members would like that. They may not.
I could think of make a motion to table this vote until the next board meeting after we get that information.
Yeah, second.
Okay, we'll pull down the first motion and we'll take the substitute motion. All those in favor of tabling this item until more information is presented at our next meeting, aye.
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 All those opposed, motion passes unanimously. So Mario, we'll have requests sent out to Mr. Fields and the other members of the ARB to provide more supporting evidence on those for next meeting.
Yes, and as I understand it, one of the requests was for us to, if it is a meeting, look at the way that the board has done it in the past with making it $80 with a two-hour limit. So we'll also recalculate what the reimbursement request would be under that criteria as well.
Right.
Okay. I have clarification on the ARB officers. Would you like to see early charge on reviewing emails from taxpayers, as that is one of their core functions?
Yeah, absolutely. I think the more information that you can provide us to make an informed decision, the better.
And being able to identify which are part of the leadership group of these requests.
Thank you.
Okay, we'll go to the next item on our agenda, 5C, discussion and possible action on purchase from Converge One through corporate purchasing contract of solution to expand capacity for formal telephone hearings.
And this is just a method for us, and it's something that we identified last year with requests for telephone hearings. This is just a software to help us expand our capacity. And like make it a little bit easier for us to manage the phone calls as they are coming in for telephone hearings. Under our phone system, as people make a call or request to for a telephone hearing, they'll call into one centralized number, and then they'll get redirected into the conference bridge for the specific panel that they need to be in. If anybody from the public wants to listen in or participate in that telephone conference, they can call into the same central number, request which hearing they want to participate or listen in on, and we can connect them and bridge them in to that same conference number. So it's just an expansion of what we already have. We did a lot of that manually last year. This is just going to help us automate a lot of that work that we need to do to manage those telephone hearings.
So is that something that we have to license per conference, I guess? Because we did upgrade the system, and I thought it was to handle all this. But it sounds like maybe had a fixed capacity, and now we need to pay more for more capacity.
Yeah, this is going to allow us to create 40 different, because each panel would require, in theory, a conference bridge. This is going to give us expanded capacity to do that beyond what we currently do it. But it's also going to help us better manage getting people into the right phone conference bridge as they come up. Again, as we anticipate moving forward, our volume of the accounts that we have to do through telephonic formal hearings is going to be more than we did in the previous year. Last year, I think we wound up doing about 400. We anticipate that we will have substantially more than that this year. And just being able to manage that in a better fashion is what we're looking for in terms of this upgrade and expansion.
And if we no longer require to do as many telephonic conferences in 2021 or years after, will this contract end? Or is it once we implement it, we'll always have the maintenance costs?
It is an annual maintenance that we pay, and if we don't need it, then we can cancel the contract for the annual maintenance, and we won't have that expense. I do think once people do this, if it's successful and they like it, that it is, again, an opportunity for property owners to do something from the comfort of their home. So it may be something that once it gets adopted, doesn't go away.
And will the cost from this year be coming from a line item transfer from something else, or is it a request for additional funding?
We'll cover the cost under the current budget, so there will be no additional funds needed.
I'll make a motion to approve the request.
I second it.
Okay, the item has been moved and seconded. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
All those opposed? Motion passes unanimously. We'll go on to item 5D, discussion and possible action on litigation report related to Texas Property Tax Code Chapter 42 appeals.
And this is our, it's included in your packet. This is our regular report of what we've got in terms of litigation. So I'm just here to answer any questions. There's nothing particularly unusual about the report from prior meetings. So again, we provide that to you guys every meeting. If you've got any questions, I'm available to answer any questions, or more to the point, Dusty is available to answer questions that you might have regarding our general Chapter 42 litigation.
I don't think I saw anything in 5D. Let's look to 5E. You know, what page is it on?
177.
We didn't provide the report this meeting. We have the Travis County Court, their notice they put out.
Oh, okay. Well, that goes to item then 5E.
Mm-hmm.
And that is just the notice from Travis County Courts. And this will affect the litigation that we've got pending, as well as any litigation against us. And the courts have just issued their, they issued an emergency order, and they're not doing any hearings. They've all been delayed. So the hearings that we had have been delayed due to COVID-19 and the effects of the emergency order on Travis County Civil Courts. So just to let you guys know, I know that there is interest in one of our cases. But we don't have an update for you because our hearing got delayed because of COVID-19.
Yeah, they'll probably be delayed to the middle of June.
It's actually the end of June now.
They haven't updated it. Okay. Yeah, per this order, it says June 15, but you've seen something else, Mr. Buckle?
Yes, they just did an extension about 3 days.
Okay, perfect. Yeah, I pulled this right before that extension was issued then. So, past June 30th, I guess now, jury trials and non-emergency trials will be delayed till then.
Actually, I think on jury trials, they went all the way to September.
Oh, wow.
Yes.
Yeah.
And they're going to stagger, I understand, the way the number of courts that are going to open, because they only have three elevators and there's too many people.
So the courts aren't functioning at all? Not even
They are for emergency proceedings, and you have to get permission from the judge to have those orders, like temporary restraining orders and things that need immediate hearing on the matter. But for jury trials, which is a lot of our Chapter 42 appeals litigation, which involves juries, those aren't being heard right now. But they are having some proceedings over Zoom and some in person granted special permission. But for all the proceedings as it applies to us, everything is being delayed.
Yeah.
Protest isn't an emergency.
Basically, they're handling uncontested, and then they're having Zoom here. Very few lawyers are willing to do a trial by Zoom.
So like all the rest of us, they are adapting to COVID-19 and implementing new procedures to deal with it in the safest manner possible. But you know, it just has some implications for us. But, you know, our goal through all of this is to try to be as fluid as we can and do the best that we can to protect our citizens and our staff.
So correct or remind me what the law was about payment of taxes under protest. Did that change or are they still paying their taxes by the deadline, even if they're protesting or in the middle of protesting?
There has been, you know, to our knowledge right now, there has not been any waivers to the deadlines, but that's going to be more of a collections issue. So I would defer that to Bruce if he knows anything or any updates related to collections.
Nothing has changed. We've asked the governor to consider waiving penalty and interest for taxpayers who were specifically affected by COVID-19. They lost their job, their businesses is not earning income, and we're waiting to hear back on that. But nothing has changed. I mean, we've taken down all our collection efforts. We're not suing or foreclosing or even making collections calls right now, and we're discussing how we're going to collect taxes when we come out of this.
Okay. I had thought that one of the last session's changes was that if they were protesting, they didn't have to pay by January 31st while it's under protest.
There are provisions for suits, properties that are protested or under litigation. They have to make what is called a 4208 or prepayment requirement, and they've got several options of what they have to pay. They have to either pay the current amount due, the amount that was due last year, the amount not in dispute, or they file an affidavit of inability to pay. But they have to do one of the four things, one of those four things.
Okay.
What has changed is relative to if it's in litigation, when penalty and interest starts to kick in. And that was a change from previous years. Okay. But that's related to penalty and interest if it's in litigation, not necessarily to making payments or paying the taxes.
Okay.
Yeah, but nothing with respect to delaying the trial dates or anything affects any of that.
I just wanted to make sure this wasn't an emergency. If we delayed it, we could have a cash flow issue.
Because one of the things is very few of our cases actually go to jury trial. Most of them are settled before then. We settle with the opposing counsel and property owners before then. So we are still actually conducting mediations as usual, using Zoom platforms and whatnot. But I think the biggest thing that calls for y'all's attention is just concerning the two cases outside of Chapter 42 appeals. Those are being delayed, which I know y'all had an interest in. That's about it. Any other questions?
Okay. So that covers 5D and 5E respectively. 5F is discussion and possible actions to add items to the future agendas. Anyone have any items they'd like to see appear on our next meeting?
We will be rolling the ARB reimbursement to the next meeting.
Okay.
We'll have our 2021 proposed budget to present, as well as our fiscal year 2019 audit.
I assume when our next meeting is probably still be via Zoom.
Yes, I don't anticipate that there will be any change, so we will do another teleconference video meeting for the board. We'll schedule that for sometime in June, early June, and we'll send an email out to the board to get dates of availability so that we can make sure that we schedule this appropriately. But we've been doing it, I think, the first Monday of the month or the second Monday of the month. It has worked out pretty well for everybody.
move adjournment. Do I hear a second?
I second that.
Second. Okay, it's been moved and seconded. All those in favor of adjourning?
Aye.
Aye.
Travis Central Appraisal District Board of Directors stands adjourned at 12:35.
Stay safe, everybody.
Bye.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye, everybody.
Take care.